So we'll continue going through the lessons of the Exodus. And to me, as you look at the lessons of the Exodus, you can look at it and you can see various applications that are right here today, especially with the war unfolding in Ukraine and the instability in the world and the stubbornness and foolishness of leaders. It's nothing's changed much. The same things are going on that took place back in 4,000 BC, and so we can we can see the lessons of the Exodus, and we can see that it's still very applicable. So when we left off last time, 35 centuries ago, in looking at ancient Israel coming out of Egypt, we were on the fourth plague. So we'll pick up there and begin seeing what the Bible has to tell us. And so let's begin in Exodus chapter 8, verse 20. Exodus 8, verse 20. And when you look at Exodus 8, it's talking about lice, a plague of lice. We don't know for sure, but it's doubtful that it was an actual plague of lice, and we'll discuss what that very probably was. So in Exodus 8:20, Moses was to rise early and go out to where Pharaoh would come down to the river, and was to ask him to let the people of Israel go, as it says in verse 20, that they may serve Yahweh. And so they asked Pharaoh to let the people of Israel go. And as you look at what takes place here and what's expounded here in verse 20, there's another thought introduced here. And it's not just freeing the Israelites, but freeing them so they can serve God, and which they were not able to do while they were in Egypt because they were enslaved. Verse 21, and God says, if you won't let them go, then if you won't let them go, behold, I will send swarms of flies on you and your servants, on your people, on your houses. The houses of the Egyptians shall be full of swarms of flies, and also the ground on which they stand. And so these swarms, when you look at this, if you were to understand Hebrew, there is a word play that takes place here. Word play is something that is beloved by Hebrew writers. And the word play is on the word send. And it means, if you will not send my people, then I will send swarms of flies. It says, verse 22, and in that day I will set them apart, set apart the land of Goshen, in which my people dwell, and that no swarms of flies shall be there, in order that you may know that I am the Lord, Lord in the midst of the land. So up to this point, Israel has suffered through the first three plagues. Now, beginning with the fourth plague, Israel is not going to suffer the plagues. He's going to just inflict the plagues on the Egyptians. And, through the first three plagues, Israel has learned some lessons. And now he's going to continue doling out those lessons to the people of Egypt. And he's going to separate the land of Goshen, where the people of Israel live. And he's not going to inflict the plagues on them. So this is going to be a very clear distinction between the Israelites and Egyptians, and a very clear lesson to both Israel and Egypt, because Israel will learn lessons, and so will the Egyptians, because they believe that their land is governed and protected by their gods, when in fact they're not protecting them. As we'll see as we go through here. Verse 24, And the Lord said, and the Lord did so, thick swarms of flies came into the houses of Pharaoh and his servants' houses and into the land of Egypt. The land was corrupted because of the swarms of flies. So as we see these swarms of these swarming insects, it's probably, as I said, it's probably not flies, probably not lice, but probably the scarab beetle is the most likely insect that we're dealing with here, because the scarab beetles can swarm, and when they do swarm, it's a pretty serious thing. If you look at the scarab beetle, it's like a June bug and a common symbol of Egypt. I mean, if you go to Egypt or the Middle East, you'll find these scarab beetles being sold everywhere. They're a common tourist item. And when you look at the scarab beetle, they would make them back in ancient times, and they would a lot of times be flat on the bottom. And this was a good thing, because then they would put dates and information that would help with dating when the scarab beetle was made. So when the archaeologists find these beetles, they're able to date the information that's in the pile of relics and debris that's there, and date it to a particular time. Technically, the scarab beetle is a dung beetle, a beetle that feeds on manure, and they have strong jaws and could literally chew through wood. And in small numbers, they weren't a problem, but when you had a huge swarm, like God is promising here, it could eat everything in sight, everything that was wood that was in sight. And so the thing was, these dung beetles would not just be on the ground. Like if you had a termite infection, they would just be on the ground. What happened with the scarab beetles is they could swarm and fly around. And so you wouldn't just have them on the ground. They would be all around you. And in that way, they were worse than termites. Now, the plague with the scarab beetles was directed at the Egyptian god Khafre. Remember, all these plagues were directed at the gods of Egypt, and this particular plague was directed at the god Khafre. Khafre seen as the god responsible for the sun moving across the sky. And why did they choose this to apply to this dung beetle? Well, if you look at a dung beetle, it would what it would do is it would have a ball of dung, which, you know, is in the shape of this, you know, a round shape like the sun, you know, small, of course, but it would be pushing it across the ground. And the Egyptians saw that as a type of a god who would be moving the sun across the sky above them. And this was why they associated with the scarab beetle with Khafre. They also viewed the dung beetle as divine, because they emerged from the carcasses of dead animals and from dung. So to them, this represented rebirth and resurrection. They didn't really understand those concepts, but they saw this beetle going through this process, and so associated resurrection and rebirth with this particular beetle. And what's happening as these beetles are swarming all over the land, it's an affront to the god Khafre, because the god Khafre can't control it. Here come all of these beetles chewing through any and everything that is wood. And this god Khafre is powerless to stop these beetles from swarming. And so they were just going through the land wreaking havoc. Exodus chapter 8, verse 25. Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, "Go sacrifice to your God in the land." And Moses and Aaron don't go to Pharaoh. They wait for Pharaoh to come to them. And interestingly, Pharaoh offers even less than he had offered before. He concedes they can worship their God, but they have to stay in Egypt to do this. So why the Pharaoh changed his mind and changed the conditions, we don't know. It was just, it almost seems like something rather arbitrary. So Moses comes back with a brilliant response to Pharaoh. Moses says, beginning in verse 26, he says, "It is not right to do so, for we would be sacrificing the abomination of the Egyptians to the Lord our God. If we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians before their eyes, will they not stone us?" So Moses knew what they were going to have to sacrifice. They were going to have to sacrifice lambs and goats. And for them to sacrifice the lambs and goats in the land of Egypt, this would be offensive. This would be offensive to the Egyptians. And like he says, they would be stoned for doing so. So so that's why he says we've got to leave the land in order to carry out these sacrifices that God requires of us. We can't do this in the land when it's going to be offensive and we're going to be stoned by the people that are enslaving us. So Moses says in verse 27, "We will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God as he will command us." So Pharaoh said, "I will let you go that you may sacrifice to the Lord your God in the wilderness, only you shall not go very far away." And then he asked him to intercede for him. And so he asked God to intercede to stop the swarming of these beetles. And it's, you know, it's interesting. This is a God, and this God is oppressing you. And this is something that happens throughout this whole event, the gods of Egypt can't control it, the enchanters and magicians can't control it. Nobody can control it. Verse 29. Then Moses said, "Indeed, I'm going out from you, and I will entreat the Lord that these swarms of flies may depart tomorrow from Pharaoh." So he gives Pharaoh the timing of when this is to take place. It'll take place tomorrow. And these beetles will be taken from the land. And then, but let Pharaoh not deal deceitfully anymore in not letting the people go sacrifice to the Lord. So I'm sure that Moses had his doubts about whether the Pharaoh would honor what he promised to do in letting them go. And sadly, you know, he says, "Stop lying and going back on your word." But that's exactly what Pharaoh does. Once God relents with the plague, then Pharaoh just goes right back to form and refuses to let them go. So, as this whole thing is progressing, Moses is gaining more confidence, and Moses is able to deal with Pharaoh in a more confident way. For instance, as he goes through dealing with this particular plague, he almost deals with Pharaoh as an equal, or maybe even a superior. It's not the way it started out. Pharaoh looked at himself as the superior, but at this point, things are beginning to change. Exodus chapter 8, verse 30. So Moses went out from Pharaoh and entreated the Lord, and the Lord did according to the word of Moses. He removed the swarms of flies from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people. Not one remained, but Pharaoh hardened his heart at this time. Also, neither would he let the people go. So, as Moses directly warned Pharaoh not to stop dealing deceitfully, and let the people go, and Pharaoh hardened his own heart once the swarms have been removed. So Pharaoh is hardening his heart. and not keeping his word. And it tells us something about Pharaoh, that he is a great example of a person whose heart has become hardened. And the bottom line with Pharaoh is he is going to do what Pharaoh wants to do. And he's not going to honor God. He's not going to respect his word. He has a certain plan and agenda, and he thinks he's being cunning, and he is trying to be cunning and deceitful in dealing with God and Moses. But you know, who is he fooling? He's not fooling God, most assuredly, and God is the one who's in charge of everything going on here. And you know, there's a lesson here for all of us, and a lesson for the world if the world would pay attention to it. And it's a world that, it's a lesson that's very applicable to what's going on with the war between Russia and Ukraine. And that lesson is, don't keep doing the same thing when it has the same disastrous consequences. So, you know, when something turns out to be a disaster, why keep doing it? And yet the Pharaoh keeps doing it, continues doing it, even though he's having one disaster happen after another. And when you think about what's going on in Ukraine, I mean, Putin is, yes, he's going to win, I'm sure, but he's suffering terrible consequences, lots of loss of life, lots of loss of armaments, and it's not turning out like he thought it was going to, where he would just sweep into the land, take it over, and be welcomed as a hero. That's not happened at all. And really, this has become a disaster for Russia on a variety of fronts. Yes, it's a disaster for the Ukrainians. You know, you have 2 million people that are already uprooted from their homes, which is a terrible thing in itself. And as you look at the way Pharaoh acts here, this is the way leaders have acted throughout history. They tend to follow this pattern. When their time and power comes, they follow the same pattern over and over again. And why would they follow that pattern all down through history? I think one of the major reasons is the God of this world is the one that they're following. And the God of this world keeps following the same pattern, and they, under his influence, continue following Satan. And Satan is a being who will do anything to hold mankind in enslavement, just like Pharaoh was determined to keep the people of Israel enslaved, to keep them enslaved, to not let them go, and he was going to hold on to them no matter what the cost. And I mean, the cost was terrible for the land of Egypt. And as you think about, you know, Satan in our time, Satan's not going to let us go without a fight. He's not going to give in easily. And so we're going to have to go through the ups and downs that lie ahead of us and endure to the end. And so we're facing the, you know, similar circumstances to that of ancient Israel. So the Egyptian people may have thought that it was God who was the real enemy, but who was the real enemy here? The real enemy was Pharaoh. He was the real enemy because he was the one who was enforcing the particular patterns that they were following, and he was impacting the people of Egypt and through his decisions. And they were suffering as a result of his decisions, not just Israel, but the people of Egypt were suffering from his stubbornness and selfishness as well. And a sad fact of history is that when a nation's worst enemy is their own leader, you know, that's that is a really terrible time. And you know, the scriptures talk about a bad leader and the terrible consequences of having bad leadership. And sadly, at this particular time, we have a lot of bad leadership throughout the world. And it's impacting the people of the nations as these leaders are not good leaders and they're not leading people in a positive path, and the people are suffering as a result of it. You know, we're all suffering from it. Look at the conditions we're dealing with. We're dealing with inflation. We're dealing with a number of different decisions that are being made in regard to various moral issues, and we're not making them. We don't want those decisions, and a lot of people don't, but we're suffering the consequences nonetheless. So at this point, I would say if you compared it back to Israel and Egypt, we're suffering along with the rest of the people in the world. God is not sparing us. We're suffering the consequences as well, because we're paying the high gas prices, and we're suffering from some of the decisions that are being made. Eventually, God will separate his people out, but he's not chosen to do so as of yet. So let's go on to the fifth plague, which is a livestock disease, and we'll pick this up in chapter 9, verse 1. Exodus chapter 9, verse 1. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Go to Pharaoh and tell him, 'Thus says the Lord God of the Hebrews, let my people go, that they may serve me. For if you refuse to let them go and still hold them, behold, the hand of the Lord will be on your cattle in the field and on your horses, on the donkeys, on the camels, on the oxen, and on the sheep. A severe pestilence. The Lord will make a difference between the livestock of Israel and the livestock of Egypt, so nothing shall die of all that belongs to the children of Israel.'" So he's making a very clear distinction between the Egyptians and the people of Israel. So the people of Israel had livestock, as did the Egyptians, and God is just impacting the Egyptian livestock. And verse 5 there, it says, Then the Lord appointed a set time, saying, "Tomorrow the Lord will do this thing in the land." So we see that God's in control. He's telling them exactly when this is going to take place. So when it does take place, they're going to have to say, "Wow, the God of Israel laid out exactly when this was going to take place, and sure enough, it did." So that's got to be some indication to them of who is in charge and who is causing these things to happen. So God's control is emphasized because Egypt suffers and Israel does not. Let's go to verse 6. "So the Lord did this thing on the next day, and all the livestock of Egypt died. But the livestock of the children of Israel, not one died. Then Pharaoh sent, and indeed not even one of the livestock of the Israelites was dead." So Pharaoh sent out his servants in order to determine if this was really what happened. Who did the Egyptian livestock die? Did the Israelite livestock die? And they were able to see a very clear distinction between the livestock of Israel and the livestock of Egypt. So it was a very powerful indication of God working out his plan here below. And so it had to be somewhat convincing, at least to some degree, to Pharaoh, even though he didn't give in totally. So you might consider how great an economic disaster this was for the Egyptians. All of these things are impacting their food supply. For some of those animals were used for food. It's impacting these animals, and these animals were used for transportation, you know, donkeys and camels. They were used as the freight system. It impacted their military capability, as you had these horses, which were used for warfare and cavalry and chariots. And you also had mules and horses, which were used for transportation, as well as camels. And we've talked about the rams and the sheep being sacred animals, that and the cattle were sacred as well. Bulls and heifers were gods to the Egyptians. The god Ptah, P-T-A-H, was represented by a bull. and it was called the Apis Bull, A-P-I-S. And this bull was chosen, and there was only one Apis bull at a time who was sacred to the people of Egypt. And this bull supposedly had the power of prophecy, and it was so highly esteemed in Egypt that when the Apis bull died, it was considered as if the Pharaoh had died, and had a very special burial take place in a national day of mourning. And the bull was mummified and entombed. I mean, you can go into Egypt, back into the tombs, and you can find these bulls that had been mummified and then buried. Another one of Egypt's greatest goddesses is Hathor, depicted with the body of a woman and the head of a cow and a solar disc between the cow's horns. And Hathor was considered to have breastfed the Pharaoh was the symbolic mother of Pharaoh and a protector goddess of the people of Egypt. And as these gods, these are gods that supposedly provided for and protected Egypt, and they basically were powerless against the God of Israel. They were not able to do what they were supposed to do. And, you know, these people are praying to these gods, and one after another of these gods is failing. And not only are the people praying, but you also have the people who represent these gods. And the priests have no power with these gods. And, you know, just like with the god, gods of Baal in Elijah's time, they had no power. And it was clearly demonstrated in the contest between Elijah and the priest of Baal. They failed miserably, and the priests were failing here. Pharaoh was failing. All these gods were failing because they aren't gods. They're powerless. They're just figments of man's imagination. In chapter 9, verse 9, it says, "But the heart of Pharaoh became hard, and he did not let the people go." So Pharaoh continues in the pattern of stubbornness and pride and ego, and would not let them go. Well, let's go on to another plague here, the sixth plague of boils. And in chapter 9, verse 8, we see here that Moses and Aaron were told to take a handful of ashes from the furnace and let Moses scatter it toward the heavens in the sight of Pharaoh. And it became dust in all the land of Egypt, and it will cause boils and break out in sores on man and beast throughout the land of Egypt. And then they took the ashes from the furnace, and this is a furnace that was used for firing pottery. And so they reached in there to get some of the ashes from the furnace and then scattered them out. And they became boils on the people of Egypt. And so the boils broke out on throughout the land of Egypt, even on the Pharaoh. Everybody suffered from these boils, including the Pharaoh, the magicians, and all of the leadership in the land of Egypt. So nobody could stand up to what God was inflicting on the land. So God brings this plague about, and they inflicted great pain upon the people of Egypt, and the people of Egypt could not stop this. Interestingly, the god associated with these boils and things, Thoth, was considered a god of intelligence and medical healing. But this god could not bring healing to the people of Egypt. And another great god, great goddess of Egypt, was Isis, the wife of Osiris, one of the chief goddesses of Egypt, and she was supposedly able to bring Osiris back to life. And again, in this instance, we see the Egyptian gods are powerless. They can't do anything. And this is just repeated throughout this whole story. And, the magicians, they've already given up. They've already admitted, we can't stop all this. And in chapter 9, verse 12, it says, "And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, and he did not heed them, just as the Lord had spoken to Moses." So after the first five plagues, it always said that Pharaoh hardened his own heart. And now it shifts, because it is now God, not Pharaoh, who strengthens his own heart. So God is in controlling the situation here. And what does this really mean? Is there a significant difference between Pharaoh hardening his own heart and God hardening Pharaoh's heart? And what is it talking about now? Is that Pharaoh now has the ability to decide of his own volition whether he's going to give in and let Israel go or not. He has free moral agency, and God's going to let him have that free moral agency. And the bottom line is now that what is being said here is that he is going to do what he's going to do, regardless of the consequences. And what does Pharaoh want? He wants Israel to remain enslaved. He doesn't want to let them go, and he's going to do his level best to avoid letting Israel go, because God's going to let Pharaoh do exactly what he wants to do. And Pharaoh's counselors are actually telling him, look, this is the finger of God. Why don't you, let's give in, because we're not going to win this. But Pharaoh would not give in. He wouldn't heed his counselors. Then we come to the next plague in Exodus 9, verse 13. Exodus 9, verse 13. And there it says that Moses is told to rise early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh and say to him, "Thus says the Lord God of the Hebrews, let my people go, that they may serve me. For at this time I will send my plagues to your very heart and on your servants and on your people, that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth. Now, if I had stretched out my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence, then you would have been cut off from the earth." So, and the thing is, as you come to the end of the age, you're going to have a very similar situation at that time, and you're going to have a God striking the gods of this world and the pride of mankind. So you're going to be dealing with the very same elements: false gods, gods that have no power, and the true God that has all power. And you're going to have a great deal of pride and stubbornness, and God is going to address all of that. And by the time it's all said and done, then man will be much diminished as he's gone through all of the plagues and trials that come at the end of the age. God makes the point in verse 13 that just as he has killed the livestock, he could have killed the Egyptians, but he's chosen not to kill the Egyptians. And he could have done that, but he's chosen to show mercy to the Egyptians. And why doesn't God just kill the Egyptians outright? Because God is teaching lessons here. It has a purpose to teach Israel and to teach the Egyptians as well. Chapter 9, verse 16. "But indeed, for this purpose I have raised you up." Pharaoh and his people, "I've raised you up for a purpose, that I may show my power in you and that my name may be declared in all the earth." And why does God say this? Think about it. God's interaction with Israel is different, because prior to this time, he has worked with individuals or a very small group. If you go back in time, you go back to the time of Adam and Eve. You go back to the time of Noah and the eight members of Noah's family. You go back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the 12 sons. You're dealing with very small groups of people. But now God is shifting, and he's going to work with two nations, the nation of Israel his chosen people, and he's going to work with Egypt. And they're going to be contrasting kingdoms. One is a kingdom that God has chosen and is going to make a kingdom of priests, and the other is a kingdom that is pagan and carnal and selfish, and they're not the worst people on the face of the earth, but they're a people that God has raised up in order to make his point to Israel, to Egypt, and to the world. So he's going to use the Egyptians as a bad example, as an example of what not to do. I mean, if you were going to look at what not to do from a historical perspective, you have it right in the book of the book of Exodus. It very clearly tells you don't follow the path of Egypt. But the people have followed that path for ever since Egypt fell and continue to follow it. Egypt, as you look at Egypt, it was the superpower of its time, and yet God systematically destroyed the nation. And it's not just a lesson for Egypt. And it took a long time for Egypt to recuperate from what they went through as God freed the people of Israel. It didn't have to be that way. It didn't have to be that way. They could have let Israel go, and that's it. That's it. They left. But they were stubborn, and they wouldn't let them go, and they suffered terrible consequences. You know, their croplands were destroyed. The river was messed up. I mean, the land really went through the ringer in the way that God dealt with them. Exodus chapter 9, verse 17. Exodus chapter 9, verse 17. Here Moses is inspired to say it. As you exalt yourself against my people, and that you will not let them go, behold, tomorrow about this time, I will cause very heavy hail to rain down as such as you has not been in Egypt since its founding until now. Therefore, send now and gather your livestock and all that you have in the field, for the hail shall come down from every man and every shall come down on every man and every animal which is found in the field and is not brought home, and they shall die. So, you know, as you look at this, God is warning Pharaoh to warn his people about what's coming with this terrible hail, and to warn his people to bring their livestock in, to get their servants out of the field, to preserve them as this hailstorm is coming. And we're looking at some, you know, the hail that took place last night was pretty small. But what came with this hailstorm in Pharaoh's time was a very large size hail that would kill people, kill animals. It was a brutal hailstorm. And it's very clearly, they're very clearly being warned about what's coming from God. And as you look at Pharaoh's point of view, he can't control this. He can't stop it. And from Pharaoh's point of view, this is a most humiliating situation because he has no power against it. Because he's considered a god, but he has no power against what's unfolding. We read in verse 6 that all the livestock in Egypt died. And we've answered this earlier in the studies we've gone through. God did not kill every last one of the livestock. You know, he didn't kill them all. He killed a representative number of them. But when it says all, it doesn't necessarily mean there wasn't one cow or bull or sheep left in the land. Doesn't mean that. It means that there were a representative number that died because the way that Hebrew works, it does not necessarily mean every last one. In English, everyone means, or all means all many times. But in this case, it doesn't mean all. Because there were cattle that continued on after this. Exodus chapter 9, verse 20. It says, he who feared the Lord among the servants of Pharaoh made his servants and his livestock flee to the houses. But he who did not regard the word of the Lord left his servants and livestock in the field. And that as a result of that every last one of them died. So, you know, as you don't share this message and emphasize to your people the need to get out of the way of this coming storm of hail, you know, people suffer the consequences. And people weren't going to heed God. They did not heed God and suffered the consequences. Like it says in Psalm chapter 111, verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all those who do his commandments, and his praise endures forever. This is telling us if we fear God, we're going to live by the golden rule, and we're going to treat people well, and we're going to honor the king, and we're going to honor and respect God. And we have living proof of that in what is unfolding in Ukraine. The war is imposing suffering on the Ukrainians and the Russians. They're both suffering. Yes, one's invaded the other, but there's a lot of suffering on both sides. Let's go to Exodus chapter 9, verse 22. There it says, then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be hail in all the land of Egypt, on man, on beast, on every herb of the field throughout the land of Egypt. And Moses stretched out his rod toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and fire darted to the ground, and the Lord rained hail on the land of Egypt. So there was hail and fire mingled with the hail, so very heavy that there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. So a couple of points to note here. The hail is big enough to kill people and animals that are left out. And it mentions fire accompanying the hail. And this is most likely lightning. And this was an unusual situation because in Egypt, you just don't have these kind of storms as in the normal course of affairs. This was very unusual that you would have a lightning storm. They're pretty normal here in Houston and around Texas, but this was not normal in Egypt because it was so extremely dry that these kinds of storms were very rare in that particular climate. And the fact that thundering mentioned tells us that it's lightning, you know, and it was just very unusual. And again, these storms that were unfolding were challenging the god Nut, who was one of Egypt's most important gods, viewed as a mother of a number of Egyptian gods, often depicted as the sky, and she is this goddess of the sky is in fact powerless. She can't stop the hail. She can't stop the thunder and lightning. And, you know, again, it's a powerless god. And so all of the gods of Egypt are just being shown one after another to be not provide for the people of Egypt as they expected. Exodus 9, verse 25. And the hail struck throughout the land of Egypt and all that was in the field, both man and beast. And the hail struck every herb in the field and broke every tree of the field. Only the land of Goshen, where the children of Israel were, there was no hail. Unbelievable. So clearly Israel could see God in action. They could see beyond the border of Goshen, out beyond it, and see all of the destruction that's taking place there. And see that God, this God that Moses has revealed to them, is protecting them. And this has to be very clear to them. But the sad thing is, even though it should be clear to them, they're not responding in faith. They don't respond in faith. So they're seeing this, but it doesn't really register fully with them. Chapter 9, verse 27. And Pharaoh sent and called for Moses and Aaron and said to them, I have sinned this time. the Lord is righteous and my people and I are wicked. So notice here that Pharaoh mentions first my people, and he seems to be shifting blame to a degree. These are my people. They're wicked. Well, aren't you wicked too? Aren't you the one who's the chief instigator of all of the enslavement and suffering that's taking place with Israel? And Pharaoh says, entreat the Lord that there may be no more mighty thundering and hail, for it is enough. I will let you go, and you shall stay. Excuse me. You shall stay no longer. So if you look at the Hebrew verses 27 and 28, Pharaoh is referring to the God of that's instrumental in all of these plagues as Yahweh. He's using the Hebrew name for God at this point. So he's at least learned something. You may not respect him. So Moses said to him, as soon as I have gone out of the city, I will spread out my hands to the Lord, and the thunder will cease, and there will be no more hail, that you may know that the earth is the Lord's. But as for you and your servants, I know that you will not fear the Lord, fear the Lord God. So Moses knew he's not going to let the people of Israel go. He knew the hardness of Pharaoh's heart. And then in verse 31, it talks about the crops. It says, now the flax and the barley were struck, for the barley was in the head. That means it was in the ripening stage, and the flax was in bud, and that means it was in the ripening stage as well. And so they're coming, their crops that are coming into fullness where they would be harvested. And it goes on to say in verse 32, but the wheat and the spelt were not struck, for they are late crops. So in Egypt, the barley is getting ripe, and the flax is getting ripe. And here we find them just getting to the stage of ripeness, and the crops are destroyed, which is going to impact the people of Egypt. We tend to assume that these plagues come right one right after the other, but that's not the case. They, all the plagues that we've gone through so far, they've been spread out over a period of time. We don't know the exact timing. It could be as much or more than a year, but it took place over time, and we can see the timing here. This has got to be taking place in January, when it's warmer, and the Passover is not yet here. It's coming, and it's in March or April, 2 or 3 months later, depending on the year. So this tells us this particular plague of hail takes place in January, and the final plague, the Passover, doesn't take place until March or April, 2 or 3 months later. So it gives us a little bit of a time indicator of how things are unfolding here. And so we can see all of these, this is taking place over a span of time, and that's an indicator of the end of the age. It's going to take place over a span of time. You've got a time and times and half a time, so 3.5 years. So it's not going to all just take place at once, boom, 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 boom. It'll take place over time, and it'll be similar to what's going on here in Egypt, and there will be things hit, and there will be some degree of humility among people and leadership at that time. But as God eases up and doesn't bring it to a close or continue the pressure, they're all going to renege on any kind of a positive stance toward God. And so you'll have similar type things taking place at the end of the age as everything comes to a close. So Moses went out of the city from Pharaoh and spread out his hands to the Lord. Then thunder and the hail ceased. The rain was not poured on the earth. Then Pharaoh saw the rain and hail and thunder had ceased, and he sinned yet more. And he hardened his heart, he and his servants. And as you see here, true to form, Pharaoh goes back on his word. and continues to enslave the people of Israel. Verse 35 says, So the heart of Pharaoh was hard, neither would he let the children of Israel go. So the Lord had spoken by Moses. So that it's exactly as God had said. So now let's go on to Exodus chapter 10 and the plague of locusts that unfolds here. Exodus chapter 10, verse 1. Now the Lord said to Moses, go to Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the hearts of his servants, that I may show these signs of mine before him, that they may tell you in the hearing of your son and your son's sons, the mighty things that I have done in Egypt, and my signs which I have done among them, that you may know that I am the Lord. So God notes to Moses that all of these things have unfolded through the hand and might of God. And he's telling Moses that these are things you need to record and you need to share with your son and your son's son, and let them know the mighty things that God did in Egypt. And so God tells Moses to tell the Israelites to encourage the people of Israel to tell their children about the mighty miracles that God did in Egypt. And isn't that what we do every year as we keep the Passover? We go through this story. We may not go through it every year. We may go through portions of it every year, and we go through the New Testament Passover and go through portions of it. And all of them are meant to help us to be reminded of the mighty hand of God. The mighty hand of God has been and has always existed and will always exist and has always been on display for the people of God if they're willing to see it. And so God wants us to see it and to heed it. And why do the, as you think about the people of God, both the physical people of God and the people who have been a part of the church, why do we remember these things? We remember them because we rehearse them, because we seek to remember them, and they help to recall these things to our minds. And so we don't forget God and the great things that he has done and is doing and will continue to do as we come to the close of the age. So the purpose is for us to recall these things, to remember them. And that's why we go through them every year, because God wants us to remember. If we forget, then we're in serious trouble. If we forget and we stop thinking about these things, these great and wondrous things that God has done, they're all telling us certain things about our God and about his plan and about our part in it. And if we don't recall these things and rehearse these things, we will very quickly forget them. So let's continue on here, and we'll finish up here in a couple of minutes. So what one of the great tragedies of the story of Exodus, of the Exodus from Egypt is that the people of Israel lacked faith. They had seen the great wonders that God had done, and yet they were not a faithful people. I mean, that's why they ultimately died in the wilderness, because they lacked faith. And, you know, when Pharaoh comes after them down by the Red Sea, what do? They immediately begin to panic and worry that God is going to let them be destroyed. But God's not going to do that. He's gone through all this trouble, and he's going to let them die there on the banks of the Red Sea? Absolutely, that wasn't going to happen. God was going to see them through, and God was going to perform one of the greatest miracles in the history of mankind as he opens the Red Sea for the people of Israel to walk through. And so Israel goes through that on top of all of the other miracles that they've been through, and yet it's not very long before they again are worried that God's going to abandon them, that God's not going to take care of them. And nothing could be further from the truth. God is with them. And just as God was with Israel, God is with us. No matter how bad it gets, then we can be assured from all of these things that God is on duty, that God is there with us. God will see us through. God will be with us to the very end. And so we can walk in faith and not give up or quit or fold once the pressure's on. Because I think I can assure you that the pressure is going to be come to bear on all of us before this is all over. And we can look at the lessons that we get from the Exodus, and we can be reminded God saw Israel through. They are the physical people of God, his chosen people. And we, as the church, are his chosen people. And God is going to be with us through to the very end. We can be assured of that and trust that God will see us through and endure through the hardships that lie on the horizon. So we'll go ahead and stop there in Exodus chapter 10, and we'll pick up in Exodus chapter 10 next week. And next week will be the last of the Exodus Bible studies. And we'll pick up some other things in the month of April as we go through the holy days, and we can be looking forward to those things. In fact, on the Bible study on the 1st of April, we will probably have a Bible study that will be a quiz. Somebody suggested it, and I thought it was a good idea. So we're going to do a Bible study that will be a more of a quiz. You won't have to turn in your papers, but just to see what you know about the
Bible study.
Yeah, see what you know about the Exodus and the story that unfolds there, both in the Old and New Testament. So we'll look forward to that. So we may have nobody at Bible study when you say we're going to do a quiz. That's usually not does not build up people coming.
Recording stopped.
We will go through that, and for anybody who's willing to take the challenge, you don't have to turn in your papers. It's something you'll just go through yourself, and we can go through it and discuss it and see the things that we can learn and remember about what's taking place. So thanks to everybody for joining us this evening. Hopefully you found it profitable. I found it profitable in giving it to you. So.